Today, we're talking flooding, stormwater, and civil engineering in El Paso. Over the last month, we've seen a handful of rainstorms that have led to localized flooding, especially in one hard-hit neighborhood in the Northeast. But every El Paso Water customer pays a stormwater fee of $7.42 per month on their water bills to fund projects that prevent or limit flooding in the city. So why do we still see flash flooding in El Paso? I'm Diego Mendoza-Moyers, a reporter with El Paso Matters, and I'm joined by Assistant Editor Pablo Villa to talk about the flooding we've seen in El Paso, why we see water pool in streets even after brief rainstorms, and what El Pasoans are getting for that $7 monthly stormwater fee they pay on their water bills. But before we start, this El Paso Matters podcast episode is sponsored by Tani, Acosta, and Chaparro, truck crash and injury attorneys. Their team of local, seasoned trial attorneys are ready to help if you've been injured in a crash. Pablo, thanks for joining me.
Appreciate the opportunity. So let's start with the obvious question many El Pasoans are asking. And that's why does the city or parts of the city flood so easily? In your story, you note that even with less rainfall than usual this year, some neighborhoods like Palomino in the Northeast and areas near Franklin High School were hit pretty hard. Can you walk us through the factors that make El Paso especially prone to flash flooding?
Yeah, and I think the number one thing that when you talk to sort of, you know, meteorologists or geologists, that the answer is really has to do with our soil here in El Paso. We've got a lot of impervious rock and a lot of kind of loose gravelly soil. And so, like you said, we get about 9 inches of rainfall per year. And this year, we're actually quite a bit below that. We're less than 2 inches of rainfall midway through July, where usually we would see over 3 inches of rain by now. So, it's still a pretty dry year by historical standards. But still, whenever we get kind of concentrated rain, it sort of, you know, falls on this impervious rock and then kind of runs off, and we have all these sort of canyons and arroyos and slopes, and it's always seeking to go to the lowest ground. So that's why we see, you know, sometimes really localized issues with flooding in neighborhoods. In a city like Houston that gets 50 inches of rainfall per year, you know, five times what we get here, the sort of composition of the soil is such that it allows for the water to absorb, and there's kind of underground drainage, and it just doesn't pool up as quickly as it does here in cities like Houston and elsewhere that see a lot more rainfall but don't have, you know, quite the same flash flooding issues directly from rainfall that we see. And so that's really a big part of it, is that just kind of the natural makeup of our geology and kind of the soil and the steep slopes that we deal with. And then the other thing is kind of a cost issue, right? Like El Paso Water, in theory, could have this extremely robust system, and we do have a big system for stormwater, but it could be even bigger, right, with even bigger drainage basins and ponds and ditches and so forth. But there's kind of this balance where, you know, how much are we willing to pay to build out infrastructure to redirect stormwater and floods when we only get 9 inches of rain per year, right? And that's, you know, not to say that there's some serious issues. And in the Palomino neighborhood, we saw homes actually get inundated with a couple of inches of rainfall, which is kind of the worst case scenario, right? Almost in El Paso. I mean, that's pretty destructive for homes and you know, pretty disruptive. You know, there are other, we see it, you know, water pool up in streets and maybe muddy streets or damage to rock walls. You know, we see things like that, but really the most intense thing is when the water pools up and inundates homes. But like I said, it's all a cost issue where, you know, we pay this $7.42 fee. And so from El Paso Water's perspective, it's like, that's enough money to build really big projects and to do a lot of things, but maybe not necessarily enough to sort of solve the issue of flooding. And you know, when we see kind of strong rainfall, maybe a couple inches in an hour or two, it's just that, you know, do we want to spend the money to limit that sort of thing when it only happens maybe every few years, right? Especially, like I said, 9 inches of rainfall, not like it's raining here all the time.
So you mentioned that there's been large amounts of infrastructure that have been set up throughout El Paso. And much of that has come over the better part of the last two decades, right? I think we both were around during the historic rains of 2006, which is kind of what spurred all of this into action, right? And I think for a large part, we do see some of the impacts of that, or maybe we don't, right? And what I'm referring to is when you drive along Interstate 10 during a hard rain, you no longer see those sections, you know, close to Piedras and some of those areas that used to become just flooded completely. You don't see that anymore, right? And so that's a direct impact from some of this stormwater stuff that we do see, and that does positively impact how our city, our residents can deal with hard rains. And a lot of that is because of this stormwater fee, which you outline in your story. And so with that, El Pasoans are paying more on their water bills each month, right? So what are they getting for that? You mentioned that the stormwater fee has increased to $7.42 a month. That's up from a little less than $5 a few years ago. And despite that, some residents still see water pooling in their streets, right? What does El Paso Water say to customers who feel they're not seeing a return on that investment?
Yeah, and you mentioned the projects, these two massive ponds. I think the project name is called the Gateway Ponds, but they're kind of in central El Paso, right around where I-10 and Piedras intersect. And you'll see on the north and south side of the freeway, they're these massive ponds, really deep, really huge. And so I think they have a capacity of like 50 million gallons of water to hold when it rains on the, you know, eastern slope of the mountain, and it washes down into this neighborhood in central. And then that the lowest point there is I-10. And so we've seen in decades past the, you know, water pull up on I-10. And obviously that's really disruptive, not just for a local neighborhood, but really everyone who's traveling, right? So you have these two ponds now that capture the stormwater and keep it from going on the road. And so that's one example of many, many dozens of projects throughout the city, some much bigger than others, that that's what the stormwater fee is going to. And I think El Paso Water has spent, since the stormwater utility was set up in 2008, following the really bad flooding we saw in 2006, since 2008, I think the stormwater spent, or the stormwater utility spent around $350 million on projects. So that's about half of the total sort of project list that the utility identified when, after 2006, it's like, hey, let's really improve our stormwater and infrastructure in El Paso to prevent flooding. So they identified $650 million worth of projects that had to get done. So they're, you know, over halfway through. And so that's what we've gotten, right? And, you know, it's hard though, you know, for example, if you live in, you know, central in Manhattan Heights, let's say, and some of these older neighborhoods that still see flooding issues, because that's kind of how they were designed, is for the water to run through the streets, and there wasn't, you know, the sort of drainage ditches and stuff. But so say, you know, after a rainstorm, you see huge boulders piling up in your street, right? Because of the water washed them down there. Like, you know, it's great that there are these ponds and these other projects that have been built, but it's still frustrating. And so you hear that frustration, and 742 times 12 is like $89 a year. So, you know, $89 a year is not, you know, that's something people notice, right? So, but I think when you zoom out, that's when you can kind of see where all this money's going is, you know, there's the Pico Norte Pond, which is near, across the street from Eastwood Middle School. And so that gathers up a lot of water and prevents flooding in that area. And so every part of town has these projects that exist. And again, some are more noticeable than others, right? A lot of them it's, you know, there's a culvert or kind of a tunnel underneath a street that redirects water from the street, or things that you may see, but you don't really, notice as this big picture of this, you know, civil engineering infrastructure that really does limit flooding in town. But of course it's a challenge when it still happens, right? And I, you know, this neighborhood we're talking about, Palomino, you know, what do they care that how much El Paso Water spent if water's still inundating their homes? So it's a tough issue for El Paso Water to communicate. But I think the way that they look at it is, hey, we only bring in so much money from this fee. What can we prioritize? And we can't sort of solve for everything. But of course, that's not a really satisfying answer for everyone. But I think the idea is to try to the extent possible, limit the flooding and try to, you know, maybe you'll have some pockets of floods, but you just try to limit it as much as you can.
Yeah, certainly. I'm not trying to necessarily apologize for El Paso Water and the work that they do. I mean, I think I point out Interstate 10 and the projects there because you can imagine what it would do to the city and to commerce and things if that continued to be a problem year in, year out, right? So cleaning that up, I think, was a high priority for El Paso Water, and I think justifiably so. I think it does make the city run a little bit better. That being said, there are projects that are, you know, haven't gotten to them yet or they're in progress, right? And so there are pockets of El Paso that see those issues, you know, still all these years later. But I know that you mentioned in your story that El Paso Water uses a benefit to cost model, right, to sort of create a priority list for their projects. And one of the major themes in the interview that you had with an El Paso Water executive was how they decide where to focus the resources that they have, because they're not they don't have infinite resources, right? They have to sort of work within the realm that they have, right? So how does this framework, this cost benefit framework, influence which areas of town get major projects like dams or ponds, and which just get a visit from something like a pump truck?
Yeah, and so this is this big evaluation that they do, right? And it gets very technical, right, with all their engineering, math, and science and stuff to sort of look at, you know, if there's such a, you know, a certain degree of flooding in an area, what's the impact, how many homes are affected, you know, businesses and so forth. And so that's kind of how you pick and choose, like, what do we fund and what don't we fund? And so a really high priority project that they would point out would be this Will Ruth Pond in Northeast. It's off of Dyer. And it's this, I mean, a really massive pond. We'll talk a little bit more about it. But the idea there is like, hey, this will, if not totally solve flooding in Northeast, really, really limit the flooding issues, because you know, water wants to go to the lowest point. And so you kind of find the lowest point in that area, and they're just excavating this massive, massive piece of property. It's like a $35 million project. And so that is how you know, something like that proceeds, because it's like, hey, we see that this is going to affect a pretty big chunk of the city. And it's not just, you know, one little pocket here or there. It's something that will have a really pretty big effect. And so that's how they prioritize projects. Meanwhile, some of the other ones, and you know, to go back to Manhattan Heights, there are certain projects that may only affect a few homes, but would be really, really costly to build a whole new drainage ditch or series of infrastructure projects to prevent, say, water from pooling up in a street, right? And the other thing too is, you know, you look at the cost, but what's the benefit? Is the benefit that you're preventing water from entering homes and from, you know, flooding a home and causing a lot of damage? Or is the benefit that you prevent water from pooling in the streets for any period of time? And I think El Paso Water just looks at the benefit really closely, right? Like, is this a minor inconvenience we're solving for, or is this a really, really damaging, you know, situation and flooding that's causing a lot of havoc and really affecting homeowners, right? Versus, hey, you know, I can't walk through my street for half an hour after a rainstorm because water's flooding through it, right? That probably wouldn't score really high in terms of the benefit. So that's how they look at it. And then also, you know, the quote Gilbert Trejo told me, I mentioned the Will Ruth Pond is like $35 million. I mean, a lot of these projects are millions and millions of dollars, sometimes tens of millions. And so do you spend that level of funding, right, to solve for a maybe, you know, not a really, really serious hazardous issue? Or do you say, hey, look, we get it. You're having water pool in your streets. We'll get some pump trucks out there. You know, we'll get their, I think their vector control or whatever they call it to prevent, you know, mosquitoes from pulling up, like, you know, kind of band-aids, right? Fixes to just try to solve the issue after a day or two. And that's what they tell customers, I think, when they're not going to build a huge project. They say, hey, okay, look, we hear your complaints. We'll try to solve that without spending all this money, because you can imagine, like, you know, again, on Manhattan Heights, right? If they were to build a whole new series of infrastructure to solve for, you know, a couple of times a year, maybe water running through the streets, people on maybe the far west side or far east side are going to go, hey, why are you spending tens of millions of dollars to do that and then charging the rest of the customers, right? They only make the $7.42 per customer. And so you got to make that stretch. And where do you direct the projects? And that's where the benefit to cost comes in, because you want it to have as widespread an impact as possible, so customers don't look at it as go, man, you really, you're spending all of our dollars that are limited on these projects that don't have a big benefit.
Okay, so that's a really good analysis, good take on how they assess that, because they didn't necessarily start this utility with unlimited funds, right? They sort of got to build up their savings just like anyone else would to fund a project at their home, right? And so that's what they're dealing with, and that's why we see some of the things we see, right? And so, you know, going back further into history, I mean, I think El Paso has this very extensive pre-Cambrian history when it comes to its geology and geography and what makes up some of the unique things that we see. That's why we all walk out of our house and see a mountain every day, right? So the city's geography plays a role in complicating flood control, right? And one thing that stood out in your piece is how unique El Paso's terrain is, right? We have mountains, we have valleys, we have flatlands and hard soils, soft soils all over the city. What did Gilbert Trejo say about how that shapes flood control planning compared to other cities?
Yeah, and you don't want to sort of excuse El Paso Water too much for, you know, whenever there is flooding issues. But I think when you really look, there is a very complicated terrain in El Paso. We have this mountain range right in the middle of the city, and in some ways, like, it presents a lot of challenges for development and. You know, we also have these river valleys, the upper valley, lower valley, and they have their own kind of differences, I guess. So there's just these various challenges of how do you direct drainage and what are the issues? And I think, like, Gilbert was talking about how on the east side of the mountains, the slopes are a little bit not quite as steep, and so that presents a different challenge versus the west side, where they're much steeper, and so you have to kind of manage a faster flowing water. You have on the east side a kind of a flatland area, right, and so kind of a desert plain is what he called it, so you have to build more ponds all throughout to sort of capture the rainfall. And then kind of the ultimate, I guess, point that Gilbert made, that is like, look, we have to deal with probably some flooding to be able to have these developments, right? I mean, like I said earlier, we could have huge swaths of the city be drainage basins or be ponds, but hey, we want to have homes there instead, right? We want to have a city. And so that's, you know, part of it. Part of what they do is they build these dams all around kind of the mountains to prevent the water from rushing down the mountain into neighborhoods. If you ever go walk up McKelligan Canyon, right, and you're walking up the walking trail towards the amphitheater, there's a pretty large dam on the right-hand side there that blocks the water from, you know, it accumulates in the mountain, rushes down into the neighborhood, but those kind of dams block it. And one interesting thing to bring up Manhattan Heights again, to this point of, you know, why do we see in Manhattan Heights pretty frequently water rushing through the streets? Well, the reason is because when that was constructed 100 years ago, right, or more, for the developer, it's like, well, you know, we want to build a home. Do you want to have to build a dam up on the mountain? The developer goes, I don't want to do that. I'll just build somewhere else. So the solution is we'll use the streets as conveyance, is what they call it, as sort of the, you know, instead of having a drainage ditch, the street essentially is that to allow the water to rush down. So the question is like, do you allow for some of these inconveniences or do you not have a neighborhood, right? And you know, again, not to cop out for El Paso water too much, right? But I think that's a fair question, right? Like you have to deal with some, you know, you have to deal with the environment you're in, right? And if you're going to build up near a mountain because it's beautiful and it's great views and it's kind of a unique environment, there might be some challenges with that, especially for places that were built under different drainage design standards back 100 plus years ago, right? And then I'll just say this too, like on the west side, El Paso Water just unveiled today this new Arroyo One Dam that is this new, like almost $6 million project that they built on the, you know, in the foothills of the western side of the mountain. And it leads into this kind of Franklin Hills area, not far from Ornato Middle School. And so that's this whole drainage ditch that they built up in the mountain to, and they, you know, expanded it and did all this stuff to ensure that if it rains really hard and water's rushing really fast down the mountain, this ditch can kind of capture that and you know, take it into the drainage ditch. And, you know, and I used to skateboard down drainage ditches, right? And, you know, and I wasn't really thinking about, yeah, man, you know, we thought of it more as like a skate park but really it's part of this big picture of like, we got to have all this infrastructure to allow for the development to happen, you know, otherwise, you know, we just wouldn't have neighborhoods in certain parts of town.
Yeah, that honestly, this is one of the things that I found the most fascinating with your story is just to look at, you know, I talk about geologic history, but El Paso itself has had, we're going on 200 years, I think it's 175 years, the city was founded in 1850, right? And you have to wonder what was going through the minds of city planners back then, late 20th century, late 19th century, all those things, and the things they had to deal with. And it is just interesting how you can go into a Manhattan Heights neighborhood, the houses are pretty tightly compacted in, and you're right, there are rolling streets all over the place, and the water does rush down those streets during times of rain. I live way out on the east side, and I know it's a lot flatter, but there's also a lot of pockets where there's ponds and those kind of things, you know, just tucked into neighborhoods. So, you know, it is just interesting how city planning, municipal planning factors into all these things through generations, right? And who knows what it's going to look like 25, 50 years from now here in El Paso. But that was one of the things that I really liked that you got into with Gilbert, and to see how city planning decisions sort of factor into what happens today. So moving on, El Paso Water rather was tasked with condensing its 20-year flood plan into just 10 years, right? What's the impact of that acceleration? You reported that City Council pushed the utility to double its pace after the floods that happened in the city in 2021. Has this faster timeline helped? And is it financially sustainable given everything that you just outlined and given how much debt the utility has already taken on?
Yeah, so after some flooding that the city experienced in 2021, I think there were parts of the city that saw 4+ inches of rainfall, right? And again, you compare that to 9 inches over the course of a year. So that's pretty intense flooding, you know, I'll put into perspective, right? But so after that, city council said, hey, we need to go faster building projects. We need to get things done to next time we have a flash flood, it won't be so damaging, right, or catastrophic. And so that's when we saw the Will Ruth Pond project that I mentioned that for now is the kind of like the number one stormwater project El Paso has working. or is working on. And so it was really in 2021, you know, El Paso Water, since the stormwater utility was created in 2008, had this kind of list of projects that they'd identified and done all the math and, you know, science and kind of doing all the, you know, planning and design for, right? And then city council said, hey, we're going to allow you to raise the stormwater fee and bring in more money. And really, like, you need to spend more money and do this and get these projects built. And so that's when we first saw, I believe the stormwater fee, when it was first introduced back in 2008 on water bills, it was like just under $4. And then that ticked up very slowly. So that was 08. In 2022, it was right around $5. So, you know, it had risen maybe a dollar or so over 14, 15 years. And since 2022, we've seen the fee go from about $5 to $7.42, right? So, you know, it's increased, and El Paso Water has been spending like $70 million a year on projects, which is, you know, a pretty sizable amount. But I think the financial challenges are presenting themselves because El Paso Water says, look, this $7.42 we collect from our customers, it only brings in enough money to cover operations and maintenance, meaning, you know, basically the salaries of the employees that are working in stormwater and then, you know, kind of maintaining the current drainage ditches and ponds and making sure the, you know, they're not getting clogged up, right, or whatever, like just kind of keeping the system going. And then capital projects and new construction projects, El Paso Water has to issue debt every year to fund those. So a Wilruth Pond or any project that requires you know, a new construction project, new capital spending, they have to issue debt for. And so they've been doing that annually since 08, right? Every year, hey, to do this project, this pond, this drainage, you know, we got to issue a few million dollars in debt, right? Or $7 million. And so, but that's kind of piled up, right? And so now where they're at is that you can imagine, you know, as your debt pile gets bigger, your interest gets bigger, but the money that they're bringing in hasn't increased that much, right? It has in the last couple of years. But I think the thing is, this debt pile has gotten large, and so it's harder for them to keep issuing debt and be able to pay that. The good news is, you know, they issue debt in like 20-year, you know, timelines, right? And so the first debt that they issued was back in 08, and so that'll mature, and basically they'll pay it off in here in about 3 years. And so at that point, El Paso Water will kind of have more, you know, ability to issue debt and kind of take on new projects. But I think that it kind of points to maybe, you know, they're going to need to maybe slow down a little bit as far as their spending on these projects. And Gilbert Trejo told me, no, you know, we're not going to decelerate our pace. Right. And, they do have a lot of things going now. You know, the Wilruth Pond will be going for, another year and a half or so, I believe. So they'll still be doing projects and stuff, but I do think that it's this problem that we see across all utilities, and it's water or electricity or whatever, is like the cost of infrastructure is going up, and the only way to pay for it is usually through customers. Right. And so, you know, how much can customers afford? Do you see further stormwater increases? And, part of it too is like the bills generally are getting unaffordable in El Paso, right? I think we all know that it's not just the stormwater fee, it's the water, the wastewater, the rates have increased for 9 or 10 years straight. And they're going to continue escalating because El Paso Water has huge projects on the drinking water side and on the sewage side, right? They're expanding sewage treatment plant in the Lower Valley, and they're building a new water treatment plant, and they're expanding the desalination plant. Like they've got a lot of stuff going on outside of stormwater, right? Outside of just this kind of drainage and rain issues. So they're spending a ton of money. They need to bring in more money from customers. How much can the people of El Paso bear to pay, right? And I think that's a real point of concern for the utility. But just, you know, to kind of bring it back to the stormwater issue, that's sort of where they're at funding wise, right? Is that they had to accelerate this plan and do it quicker and faster and you know, solve these flooding issues as soon as possible. But, you know, you only have so much room for that when everything you paid for is paid for by customers. And how much more are we willing to pay, you know, beyond the $7.42? And I would expect probably to see more stormwater fee increases in the years ahead, you know. How much, it's hard to say, but everything seems to be pointing to that. The utility needs to bring in more money to pay for these projects.
As a taxpayer, that's unfortunate news to hear, right? It is a pocketbook issue as much as it is a quality of life issue. And I know you'll keep us informed on that in the months and years ahead. So thank you for that. You outlined really well how El Paso Water goes about financing these things, planning these things. But let's talk a little bit about the projects themselves, right, and their impact. You alluded to Wilruth Pond several times during our discussion here. That was listed in your story as a mega project, right? That along with things like Palisades Dam and some others. What makes those projects significant, right? And what kind of impact will they have once they're complete or now that some of them are complete?
Yeah. And again, I mean, and I keep talking about the Wilruth Pond, but I think really El Paso Water, that's like the first thing they'll tell you about. This is our biggest project, and it's really going to alleviate a lot of the long-standing flooding issues that we see in Northeast. We've seen them, you know, kind of rear their head right in the last few weeks in this particular neighborhood in Palomino, but it's not a new thing out there that they deal with flooding, and, you know, businesses off Dyer sometimes will flood and things like that. So the thinking is, hey, let's build this really, really massive pond that can hold, I think it's up to 100 million gallons of water, even a little bit over that. And if you go drive over there, I mean, it's right across the street from the YMCA up there in the Northeast. And it's a massive piece of property, right? If it's not a mile long, it's a half mile long. It's really long. And they're excavating this massive piece of property, right? And so I was out there the other day, and what they're doing right now is that they're basically just digging it deeper and deeper, and they got a tractor going, scooping dirt up, pouring it into the trailers of semi trucks, and then, you know, one semi after another comes and takes this dirt out, and I guess they go to the landfill or somewhere. But just the point is, I mean, it's a huge scale project, right? Where you, I mean, you know, one truckload of dirt is like a drop in the bucket for this massive property. So it just kind of shows you the scale of what we're talking about here. Like, they talk about these projects, but they really are pretty big for a utility of El Paso Water size to, you know, excavate this massive property and beyond like this actual design and engineering work. Before any of this happens, it's you got to acquire the land, right? And you got to deal with homeowners and property owners and communicate to them, hey, this street's going to be closed, that street's going to be closed. So it's very disruptive, right, to do these projects. It costs a lot of money. It takes years of planning and design before you even put a shovel in the ground, right? And then you got to get your contractor on board. And so that Wilruth Pond in particular is a really big project, and it's not easy to undertake those types of things. Some of the other ones that they have going on is they're also doing this Palisades Dam. That's it's like at the beginning of the Billy Rogers Arroyo, if you can imagine, off of Robinson Avenue, not far from the entrance to Scenic Drive. And they're, you know, there's, again, it's near the mountain, right? And so they're trying to expand the culvert and kind of allow for sort of more water to wash down the mountain, right, in a rainstorm, and kind of expand the ability of the system to hold the water. And so again, it's not really flashy or sexy, right? But it's kind of just like, hey, if there's a really big rainstorm, we want to be able to have the ability to manage that and to prevent it from reaching homes, right? And I'll just mention another kind of, you know, low key aspect of this, or not widely recognized aspect of all of this, is like when they build these projects, the whole idea is that, hey, if we increase the capacity that we have to kind of hold water, we actually take homes out of the floodplain, right? And so a lot of places in El Paso, I mean, technically, if you look at like a FEMA floodplain map, there are a lot of places in El Paso where homeowners really should have flood insurance, right? And there's a risk of flooding, and people, maybe they have to pay for that, or they just don't have it, right? And they face that risk. And so a big goal of the stormwater utility is to take swaths of El Paso out of the floodplain and sort of, prevent or reduce their risk of flooding. And so, you know, like you'll see per project, I think the Wilruth Pond is it's a several hundred, parcels of property that are removed for the floodplain from that one. Right. So that's kind of a big part of it, is that, hey, if we build this system to be able to hold more water and to direct this water, then, if 100-year flood hits, right, then X amount of homes will not get flooded. And they also point to like the Pico Norte Pond, because really developed parts of town, off of Montana, right on the east side, are in a floodplain, but you wouldn't know that because there's enough infrastructure there where if it rains, it doesn't flood. And if some of this stuff wasn't there, a lot of homes would. And so that's kind of another aspect of this insurance aspect and trying to, gradually as much as possible, take homes in El Paso and reduce, or, you know, out of the floodplain and reduce their risk of flooding.
Okay. Your interview with Gilbert Trejo ended on a pretty candid note. He said that Mother Nature is undefeated. Does that mean that we'll never be able to prevent flooding entirely? Or is the goal for El Paso Water more about minimizing the worst case scenarios, right? And if you'd like to touch on this, I mean, what role, if any, does climate change play in any of this?
Yeah, so, like you said, I mean, Gilbert basically was like, man, Mother Nature, like at some point, it's always going to, at some point at some time, it's going to drop more water than the infrastructure in place is designed to handle. Because I was curious, like, are we building to some point where after you spend so many hundreds of millions of dollars, it's like, man, we've really solved flooding. But then, you think there's always going to be needs for, renovation. That this stormwater fee is going to fund renovation, or, we have growth, right? So there's going to be new projects that need to be done. And so there's, I think it's safe to say, like, it's impossible to say, hey, under any circumstance, we're not going to have any flooding, right? And I think, you even see that in other cities, obviously, right? It's not just El Paso that deals with flooding. We saw San Antonio, the city of San Antonio, deal about a month ago with some really, really extreme flooding. And I used to live in San Antonio, and it's crazy to see certain parts, underwater and vehicles getting washed away, right? And I mean, they spent hundreds of millions on flood infrastructure there too, right? And so I think there's a little bit of a debate of, like, do we need to improve our infrastructure, or was this just kind of a freak thing of nature, right? And it's the same thing here. You can't ever say, like, man, we've really solved flooding in a town where, yeah, we built right up to the mountain, right? We've got these low-lying areas in the lower and upper valleys that water wants to go there, right? So I think it's fair of Gilbert to say, like, we're never probably going to totally solve this, but what we can do is build projects that mitigate it, limit the risk that most El Pasoans face, and try to just limit it as much as possible. And then, yeah, I mean, I think as far as climate change, like, there's always kind of a, the trend of rising temperatures is clear. The trend of precipitation is sort of less clear, right? Like, are we seeing more or less, with the shifting climate? But I think one thing that is kind of a, clearer with the precipitation is that you see more sort of intense extremes, right? Like, when it rains more, or sometimes when it rains, it'll hang over an area for a long period of time. And that's what we saw in Central Texas, right? With one of the great tragedies in the state of Texas, in Kerrville and so forth, with these intense storms, causing, historic flooding, right? And so that's something the data does show, like, there are, when it does rain, it's probably going to rain harder, and will we be able to outrun that? And it's not totally clear. So I think from that perspective, like, it's hard to predict the future of how this is going to go, but that's why El Paso Water, they've got a long list of projects, a lot of work left to do, right? And so, hopefully we're here 10, 20 years from now, and it's like, man, we've got a really robust infrastructure. Maybe there's some flooding issues somewhere, but we've, generally mitigated the problem for most El Pasoans.
All right, Diego, good stuff. I think we'll close the discussion there. I encourage all our listeners to go check out your story on flooding and stormwater projects at elpasomatters.org. And I know you'll keep us informed on all the latest developments on this and other energy and environment topics. And thanks for having me on the show.
For sure. We'll talk again soon. Thanks, Pablo.